Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, what's up, everybody? I hope everyone's having a good morning on this beautiful Saturday morning. Like, weather is nice. Clouds are all up in the sky, blue sky, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's all great. Per usual, if you guys hear any background noise, it's because my dogs, my lovely dogs, are out and about and walking around and all of that kind of stuff. So, just throwing that out there. So, on today's episode, I'm going to be covering, I'm going back to the real kaiju segment that I've done before. I've already covered Gustav the Crocodile, and now I'm going to be covering a whale. A whale by the name of Mocha Dick. Now, as I said whenever I first announced that I was going to be doing this episode, that some of you may be like, why is it Mocha Dick? Like, did he just say Moby Dick wrong and everything? No, I did not. Mocha Dick was a real albino sperm whale that was known for attacking whaling ships and all of that. And amongst other things that I'm going to get into later on in the episode, this creature helped inspire Herman Melville to write what is, in my opinion, the greatest novel ever written, Moby Dick. Now, you guys know, I've talked about it before, Moby Dick is my favorite book. My introduction to Moby Dick, and I'm not going to get too deep into Moby Dick itself, but I do need to tell a little bit about it so that I could set up to talk about Mocha Dick. Now, my introduction to Moby Dick was, anyone want to take a wild guess? Yep, you guessed it, in a hotel room while traveling with my father. And we were scrolling through channels one day, and, you know, they were just trying to find something for me and my brother to watch just to keep us occupied and all that. And what they ended up coming across was the 1956 Moby Dick film that starred Gregory Peck as Captain Ahab, which to this day, Gregory Peck's portrayal of Captain Ahab is my favorite portrayal of Captain Ahab. And whenever they went to it, it was kind of towards the end, just before the big climactic battle between the whalers and Moby Dick and all that. And I didn't know what it was at first. Like, you know, I see them all on the ship and all that, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, is this a pirate movie? Or, like, what is the deal with this? And then I see Moby Dick for the first time. And I'm like, at first I was like, oh, it's a sea monster movie or something like that, you know? And, you know, my mom was there watching it with me, and she's like, no, it's not a sea monster movie. It's a movie based on a book called Moby Dick. And she told me a little bit about it and all of that. And so I was just zoomed in on the TV watching the big climactic showdown between Moby Dick and the whalers. And I was super happy, super excited that Moby Dick ended up winning the fight. Spoiler alert, you know, I mean, it's kind of weird, you know. There's a lot of people out there that don't actually know how Moby Dick ends. They know the basic premise of it, but they don't know a whole lot of what actually happens in the story. But let's be honest here. The book itself was written in 1851. And so I think the statute of spoilers has long passed. Just throwing that out there. But pretty much ever since then, I was locked in with Moby Dick. I'm like, man, this is amazing. This is great. This is awesome. And so naturally, being a little kid, I was probably, I'd say, about 6, 7 years old, something like that. I wanted a Moby Dick toy so that I could play with it and all of that. Well, you know, this was the 90s, and it's not like, you know, you could just go to your local Walmart and like, well, here's a toy of Moby Dick on the shelf. You know, you couldn't do that. So one day we had gone to the zoo, and I had a little bit of spending money with me from doing like household chores and all of that kind of stuff and getting my allowance. See, whenever I was a child, to get your allowance, you actually had to work for it, you know, but Like I hear from people now to where it's like, oh yeah, we get like 20 or 30 bucks a week. And I'm like, for what? And they're like, well, nothing. That's just our allowance. Like, you don't have to do anything for it. Like, dadgum, I had to rake the leaves outside, clean the whole house, like wash the cars, you know, like I had to do all that kind of stuff on a weekly basis to get $5, you know. But that was the thing. It was $5 a week that we were able to get for doing everything. And so went to the zoo, and you know, we was in the gift shop just looking at like little toys and stuff like that. And they had a pack of like sea creatures, and it was like a dollar per pack, or like $1.50 a pack. It was real cheap. It's the early 90s, you know, so it was real cheap. And it came in with like five or six little toys that each one is like, you know, a whale, a shark, you know, like a sea lion, you know, like stuff like that. And I think an orca was one of them. Real cheaply made, nothing really special about them. And one of them was a sperm whale. And so I was like, oh my God, it's a sperm whale, you know, but its color, like its belly was white and the top of it was like gray or whatever. So I bought that little pack specifically for the whale and, you know, got home and I was all excited and pumped. Like I've got my Moby Dick toy. I'm very happy. But at the same time, I was like, this isn't accurate because he's not white. So I actually, my dad had some white paint, and I asked if they would be okay with me doing it, and they said, yeah. So I got a paintbrush and got some of that white paint and painted that little whale toy white and like dotted his eyes red. I don't know why. I just felt that Moby Dick would have red eyes. And so, you know, let it dry and everything. And so, boom, I had my own little Moby Dick toy. And whenever I would take baths, you know, I would have it in there and I would be making him swim around. And like, as far as I was concerned, like Moby Dick could stop anything and everything. Like if he got in a fight with Godzilla in the water, Moby Dick was going to take him down. You know, that was my mentality back then. I loved Moby Dick. And so over the years, like I would watch different little animated cartoons that dealt with Moby Dick. Whenever the miniseries starring Sir Patrick Stewart as Ahab came out, I was real deep into that. I wore that VHS tape out watching that. I'm still a fan of that miniseries to this day. And there's been a number of other Moby Dick adaptations that's been done, and I own them all. Like, you know, there's things that's done on the BBC and stuff like that. Like I own them all. I love Moby Dick. Like, you know, I'm gonna have all that stuff, you know what I mean? And one thing that's really cool that you guys are probably gonna like is that not long after that, my mom went to college to become a school teacher. And while she was in college, one of her like required readings for one of the classes was Moby Dick. And so she bought like it was like a college, like I don't really know how to put it. It was like a college course edition of Moby Dick, to where it was the novel itself, but then on the sides of the pages it had like different little things, like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't really know how to explain it. It's the type of book that you would see like in a college classroom or something like that, you know. And it had some pictures in it, like some artwork and all that kind of stuff. And whenever she brought that book home, I was like, oh my God, you've got a Moby Dick book, you know, like I was super pumped about it. After she graduated, or after she passed that particular class and she no longer needed that book, she gave the book to me. And that was my first actual copy of Moby Dick that I ever owned. And it took me a long time to read it because it is a difficult read. But that was the first copy of Moby Dick that I ever read. I still own that copy of Moby Dick to this day, and it's one of my all-time favorite books. But anywho, so I've been a lifelong fan of Moby Dick. And naturally, you know, growing up poor and growing up in the 90s, I didn't have access to the internet and all that kind of stuff to really look up all kinds of stuff about Moby Dick or anything. Like, they had some books at my school library, like children's versions of Moby Dick and all that, and I would check those out and read them from time to time. But it was I was well into my teens before I finally had access to the internet and I could look stuff up pretty much at will and all of that. Like, if I would go over to one of my friends' houses, they had internet, you know, I would get on their computer and, look up whatever I wanted to and all that kind of stuff. And so then that's whenever I started finding out different things concerning Moby Dick. One, that it was Melville's own whaling experience because he was on a whaling ship for 3 years. He used his own experiences there to write Moby Dick. Another, like, true event that had happened, the tragedy of the whaling ship Essex, that was attacked and sunk by a whale. They made a movie about it a couple of years ago. I say a couple of years ago. It's been a few years ago. But it's called In the Heart of the Sea, and it stars Chris Hemsworth and Tom Holland. And very, very good movie. I very much enjoyed it. Went and saw it in theaters and everything. I'm going to cover it one day because there are some historical inaccuracies that happened in the movie versus what actually happened with the actual event and all of that. So I'll get to all of that at another time. And it's then that, when I'm looking up all of this stuff, I find out that Moby Dick, the fact that it was a white whale, was based on a whale named Mocha Dick. Now, if anyone's ever wondering why whales like this got their names the way that they did, in the case of Mocha Dick, Moby Dick, there's never really been an official thing stating why Herman Melville named Moby Dick Moby Dick, because Moby isn't a real place. And that's going to make sense to you here in a minute, because Mocha Dick, Dick, as we all know, is a nickname for Richard. And so they would name the whales names like that, like Dick or Tom or James, things like that. And then the first part of their name would be like an area that they frequented, where that most of the sightings would happen and all of that kind of stuff. And in the case of Mocha Dick, he was mostly seen and sighted near, like, and around the Mocha Islands. So his name was Dick for Richard, pretty much. And to distinguish him from any other whale that also had that name, they attached Mocha to the top of it, meaning that, and also it would just let people know that that's where, if you go to that area, that's the type of whale that you potentially need to look out for. And so he was named Mocha Dick because his name was actually Dick, the nickname for Richard, and he resided around or near the Mocha Islands. Now, pretty much the account that we have of Mocha Dick is from an individual by the name of Jeremiah Reynolds. And he wrote a book that was of first-hand accounts, and it was called Mocha Dick, The White Whale of the Pacific. And he gathered all of these first-hand accounts from many people and all of that that had actually seen him or been near him or knew people that had been near him and all of that kind of stuff. So a lot of the information, it could be, you could sit there and be like, we're getting into sailor tall tale story territory. You know what I mean? So, like, some of this may be fabricated, but at the same time, some of it may be true. So who really knows? I don't have a whole lot of information about him. By the way, that book that he wrote, it wasn't necessarily a book. It was really more of an article that was published in 1839 in something called the Knickerbocker. It was a New York magazine that got different little articles and things like that and would put them in the magazine and all of that stuff. So in 1839, his account of dealing with, people that had actually had firsthand accounts of Mocha Dick was published in the Knickerbocker. And I own this. You can buy it on Amazon. It's very short. It's like, if I had to take a guess, I'd say 40, 45 pages, something like that. It's not a whole lot to it, but it is a chronicle of like the firsthand accounts that people had dealing with Mocha Dick. Now, let's talk about a little bit of the description that has been given to Mokadyk. Now, again, however accurate this is, who really knows, because it is taken from, yes, first-hand accounts, but it's first-hand accounts from sailors in the 1800s. You get what I'm saying? Like, you know, like if there's a reason that sailors, especially back then, were known to just have like these massive, tall tales of sea creatures and sea beasts and things like that. And all like you know, they were known liars, basically. So, you know, who knows if a lot of this is correct or not. But the basically, he was solid white. Like, Jeremiah Reynolds described him as white as wool. And it said that the front part of his head was completely covered in barnacles. And all across, pretty much like his back and his sides or anything, whatever. Like I'm going to go ahead and let you guys know this story does not have a happy ending. They ended up getting Mokadyk. So just throwing that out there. But whenever they got him and like observed his body and all of that kind of stuff, he had 20 harpoons in his back or in his sides and things like that from the multiple attempts to try and kill him. Reportedly, he had destroyed, according to a lot of these first-hand accounts, he had destroyed 20 different vessels. Now, whenever they say destroy, that could be anything from he rammed it and it got to where it was springing such a leak that they had to stop hunting him and they had to hurry up and patch up the ship and bring it back to a dock. Or, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he sunk the vessel, though there were some people that claimed he did sink some vessels while ramming them and all of that. It was said by a lot of people that encountered him that he was very docile. Docile. I think that's how you pronounce that. But anywho, so much so that a lot of times before they would lower the smaller boats to actually go out and try to harpoon the ships and all that kind of stuff, he would come up to the actual whaling vessel and a lot of times just swim next to the vessel. Just checking it out, not really having anything to do with it, because, you know, whales are not known to be aggressive. I mean, that's the reason why whale watching is the massive industry that it is. I've never been whale watching myself. I sure would love to go, because I'm team whales 100%. I love whales. I'm one of the guys that's like, you know, save the whales and all that kind of stuff and everything. Like, I love whales. And sperm whales are my favorite. Just throwing that out there. And yes, it is 100% because of Moby Dick that sperm whales are my favorite. But he would be very docile and a lot of times would swim alongside the ships and everything. But now, unfortunately, you know, a lot of times they would stop the ship, lower down, like, you know, the smaller boats and everything to try and attack him. And it's when he would get attacked that his aggression would really come out. And like I said, there were multiple first-hand accounts of people that actually encountered him that would flat out talk about how aggressive he would become once he was attacked. So much so to where it's like he would use his fluke to destroy some of the smaller ships that would come out. For those of you that don't know how whaling worked, it would be like the massive ship, the ship itself, with like the sails and all of that kind of stuff. It would come, you know, and whenever they would see, I actually gave Emily this fun fact the other day. She never knew about this, that whenever they would, someone would be up in the crow's nest, and whenever they would see a whale come up and they would spout out, you know, to basically take a breath and all of that, that's where the phrase, "there she blows," comes from. That's a way that they would pretty much announce that there were whales out there, and they would be pointing like, "there she blows," you know, and all that. And Emily had said something the other day, like she saw something and she was like, "there she blows," and I was like, you know where that phrase comes from? And she was like, no. And I told her, and she's like, I never knew that. And I was like, yeah. I'm like, that's how it came about, from the whaling industry. And so, anywho, whenever they would see the whales, they would lower the smaller boats, and they would have oars, and they would row out there. And whenever they would get close enough to one of the whales, they would throw a harpoon. It would stick into the whale. Whenever the whale would be trying to swim away, they would have a rope that was attached to the harpoon as well as attached to the boat itself. And it would pull the boat, and then eventually the whale would get tired. It couldn't get away. The boats would pull up alongside the whale. It's a very barbaric way of how they would do this. And whenever they would get up to the whale, they would finish it off, basically, you know, just stab it to death until it was finally dead. And whenever a boat was being pulled like that, that was called a Nantucket sleigh ride, because at the time of all of this happening, pretty much the whaling capital of the world was in Nantucket. And so they referred to that as a Nantucket sleigh ride. I do not condone, nor am I pro whaling in the slightest. I'm just not. The industry has very much fascinated me, and I've read many, many books on, like, the history of Nantucket and the history of, like, the whaling industry and all of that kind of stuff. I have one book that's called Leviathan, and it's about the whaling industry, specifically during this time period, whenever Nantucket was the whaling capital of the world and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I'm very fascinated by the subject, but I do not condone it at all because, you know, again, I'm a save the whales kind of guy. But anywho, so Moka Dick, whenever they would let out the smaller vessels to go and try to harpoon him and everything, a lot of times they would harpoon him. And then while they were on the Nantucket sleigh ride, he would attack them with his fluke, or he would stop. He would dive. Like, sometimes he would drag the boats underwater. Sometimes, like, it would be such a dangerous situation, they would have no choice but to cut the rope, or they would be drug under and things like that. That's how so many harpoons ended up getting stuck in his back from the numerous attempts to try and capture him. And they would say, like, he would deep dive and then he would come up and, like, breach out of the water. Sometimes they would say with such force that his entire body would leave the ocean, and he would be suspended, basically, and then go back into the water. Now, is that true? Who knows? You know, we see humpback whales do that, but not completely or anything like that, but, you know, like, they dive up and then, like, fall back down and everything. The best way I know how to describe that is if you've ever watched anything during Shark Week, and you see the sharks, you know, go to attack from below, and they move at such speed and force that whenever they come up out of the water, their entire body comes out of the water. And the accounts from witnesses and everything is that Moka Dick was capable of doing that. Is it true? I don't know. That's a massive creature to be able to propel himself to the point where his entire body could leave the water. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying it's fabricated, but it is. To me, it really gets into that tall tale territory, in my opinion. Now, unfortunately, he was killed in 1838. A whaling ship finally got him. Pretty much what happened was they found a pod of whales. And because whales do travel around in pods, in families, and things like that. And while they were attacking this particular pod, they killed a calf of a cow. Okay, I mean, I don't know if you guys were aware of that, but just like with like cows, like moo cows and all that, you know, livestock and all of that kind of stuff, their sexes are pretty much referred to as the same as that. A male is a bull. A female is a cow, and the adolescent whale is a calf. So they use the same terminology. And apparently this whaling ship had attacked a calf, and they were in the process of, like, trying to kill it and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I wasn't able to find any accounts of like how it actually went down, but reportedly, while they were trying to kill this calf, Mocha Dick tried to come to the rescue of the calf because a bull in a pod will try to protect the other whales in the pod. Like, that's just what they do. And whenever he sensed that the calf was in danger, he went to try and save it. And he ended up getting killed himself. The whaling industry, the reason why they did what they did was because they would get meat from the whale, blubber from the whale, and they were able to produce oil, like whale oil and everything. And they would use this oil in things like lanterns and streetlights and things like that. It was a very, very lucrative business back then. It was one of the top businesses in the world. And that's just how they did it. That's where, like, the majority of oil that was used back then for, just using, like I said, like lanterns, streetlights, things like that. They got the oil from these whales. And then once they got them, they put the oil in barrels, and then they would ship the barrels off all over the world to be used. It was a very big, booming business. And just to pretty much let you guys know the size of Mocha Dick, and not just lengthwise, but what they were able to get from him and all of that, was they measured him. Now, again, this isn't official, so he doesn't hold any kind of official record of like the largest sperm whale ever, because there was no photographs taken of the measurement or anything like that. And for things to hold a world record, there has to be multiple documents. You can't just say, "Oh, I killed this thing and I measured it and it was such and such long, so it's the biggest one that's ever been." You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't fly like that. Like, there has to be documentation, there has to be photo evidence, there has to be video evidence, things like that, so that it can be indisputable that that's how large that creature was. And unfortunately, even though they claim to have measured him at the time of killing him, there's no other documentation other than, "Yep, we measured him." So, who knows if he was really this big? Because the average sperm whale grows anywhere from like 45 to about 55 feet. You'll have some that's like a little bit bigger than that, okay? There are some anomalies out there. So you will have some that's a tad bit bigger than that. According to the measurement that they took of Mocha Dick whenever they killed him, they claimed him to be 70 feet. That is a massive creature. In case you guys weren't aware of that, that is a massive creature. To put that into perspective as to how large they are claiming that Mocha Dick was, let's look at the blue whale. Everyone knows that the blue whale is the largest animal in the world. Not only is it the current largest animal in the world, it is the largest animal, period, that has ever lived in the history of our planet. You include any dinosaur or any other prehistoric animal or anything like that, sea creature, anything, the blue whale is the single largest creature that's been discovered so far that has ever lived in the history of planet Earth. A female blue whale can grow anywhere from 75 to 79 feet. That is their max size. A male will get anywhere from 66 to 70 feet. And that is the largest animal to ever live. And so you have all these sailors that captured Mocha Dick, and they're claiming him to be 70 feet long. So basically, a male blue whale, if you go off of like the max size that one can get at 69 feet, they're trying to say that Mocha Dick was 1 foot longer than the blue whale. You see why this sounds like a fabrication? Like, as far as his size goes, like, you understand now? Because basically, that would put this one sperm whale on the level of a blue whale. And sorry, that's just not the case. Now, The reason that they wanted Moka Dick so bad is because at the time they felt that he was very unique. An albino whale was very rare. It's still very rare to this day. There is an albino humpback whale, I believe, that usually hangs out around Australia and all of that. I believe its name is Willow. Like, solid white, you know, whale watchers, they go out there, they try to see it, but they can tell that she gets stressed out whenever the vessels get too close and everything. So I believe it was the Australian government has actually put ordinances in place to where, like, you cannot get within a certain amount of feet of this particular whale because they just don't want people to bother them and all of that, which makes sense, you know? The reason, like, you know, like, albino whales are rare. And they were rare back then. And there were a few reports afterwards of, I believe it was in the 1850s, that there was another, there was no proof of it, there was no anything. It was just somebody reported that, like, oh yeah, I was the captain of this ship and we took an albino sperm whale. Like, yeah, right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on, dude. Really? But, anywho, so Moka Dick pretty much lived anywhere from like the early 1800s to the very late 1790s up until 1838. So he was anywhere between like 40 to 30 years old, something like that. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that they killed him. But, you know, the world was different back then. But, you know, he became so renowned that people saw it as a challenge. They wanted him. They wanted to be the ship captain, the crew, to claim that they took down the great Moka Dick. One, because of his color, the fact that he was an albino. They wanted to try and take him down. Two, reportedly destroying 20 vessels, evading another 80, according to how many people said that they saw him, they went after him, and he was able to escape from them. That he had 20 harpoons in his back, showing that many, many attempts were made to try and bring this whale down, and they couldn't do it. And unfortunately, according to the accounts, it was that Moka Dick was doing what the bull of his pod should do in trying to protect the members of his pod that ended up getting him taken down. He was so renowned that there were, while he was, like, you know, out and about before they killed him, whenever other whaling ships would come to port and get out at Nantucket or in other places and all of that kind of stuff, that a lot of the sailors would come out and, like, it's like he was a celebrity in a way. Like, they would get out and basically say, so what's going on with Moka Dick? Has anyone seen him lately? Is there any news? Has he attacked anybody lately or anything? Like, people wanted to know, like, what the deal with him was and if he had been captured yet. And unfortunately, like I said, he did end up getting captured. I forgot to mention that whenever they got him, as far as his size was concerned, they claim that just from him, his one single body, not from any of the other members of his pod that were taken that day or anything, just from him, they were able to get 100 barrels of oil from his body. So that's another claim as to his tremendous size and all of that. And naturally, as I said, Herman Melville, who would end up writing Moby Dick, took the tragedy of the whaling ship Essex, which was attacked and stowed by a whale. Again, that was made into a movie called In the Heart of the Sea. Check it out. It's a very good movie. He took that event that happened, coupled with his own 3-year experience of working on a vessel, as well as the mythos / legend of Moka Dick, and came up with the great American novel, Moby Dick. And like I said, eventually I am going to cover the film itself, In the Heart of the Sea, which I don't know if I'm just going to cover that movie by itself and then the tragedy of the Essex by itself, or if I might do a combo and talk about the tragedy of the Essex as well as the making of the movie and everything. I'm not entirely sure, but I will cover both eventually, either as two separate episodes or one episode. I will cover the book itself of Moby Dick and go into more detail about how Herman Melville used his own experiences and meeting with individuals that helped take down, meeting with individuals that were on the Essex and all of that kind of stuff, and combining all of that into his novel. Just one little fun fact about Herman Melville that's kind of sad when you really think about it. He used to be a very, very prominent writer. People, you know, in his day, people really, really liked his books, his stories that he would tell and everything. But eventually, the public lost interest in it. And whenever he wrote Moby Dick, that was supposed to be like, you know, his tip-top thing that he was going to write and be known for. And he wanted this to put him back on the map. Whenever the book was published, it was not received well. Critics didn't too much care for it. A lot of readers didn't too much care for it. It was years later, I mean many years later, before the book was re-evaluated and was basically like, no, this book was ahead of its time and it's better than what people gave it credit for, and it started gaining traction and all of that, until now Moby Dick is one of the most famous and popular and well-known books that has ever been written. It's the book that coined the phrase the great American novel. I know we've probably all heard that before. It's a book to where I would be hard-pressed to find somebody, to find anybody, that to utter one line, the opening line from Moby Dick, and they would not know what you were talking about. Just walk to anybody and say, I'm going to give you a line, the opening line of a book. Tell me what I'm talking about. And when they say okay, just simply say, call me Ishmael. Most people are going to know. You know, I've told many people before, and I've told you guys before, that I'm a writer myself. I don't have anything published because, quite frankly, I'm too chicken. You know, I'm afraid of what the reception and feedback to it would be, because let's be honest here, the internet can be a cruel place. And as much as I love coming up with stories and all of that kind of stuff, I'm very, very afraid to put them out there, because I don't know how I'll be able to handle the criticism that they will receive, you know. But I've written one novel in its entirety, and I've written dozens and upon dozens of short stories, and they vary from post-apocalyptic to drama to comedy to, you know, just all kinds of things. I'd say in roughly 80% of my writings, I have made at least one reference to Moby Dick in about 80% of them. Even if it's something as like doing a quote from the book, or as an observer, like writing through a particular character's perspective, saying that they look at a bookshelf and they see a copy of Moby Dick on the shelf. Something like that. I love Moby Dick. But anyway, as I was saying about Herman Melville, that the reason I probably got off track there, I'm not going to lie, guys, is because my brother and my mom showed up. My brother, as I said, I can't remember if I talked about this or not, but we're going to Buffalo Wild Wings this evening to watch the fights, and my brother is going to be going with me. And so my mom was already coming into town, so she brought him over to drop him off and everything. And he dropped off his little dog. It's a little rat terrier. And dropped him off. And while I was in the middle of speaking, he looked at the door and kind of gave a growl. So I stopped recording, went and looked out the door. There was nothing there. And then I came back, and I may have lost track of what I was saying, so I apologize for that. But anywho, what's sad about Herman Melville is that, you know, I just talked about a little while ago about how well-known the book is. Like, it, going as far as, you know, you just walk up to anybody. Like I said, hey, tell me what book I'm talking about. Call me Ishmael. Like, 98% of the people you talk to are going to say, isn't that Moby Dick? And you'll be like, yeah, yeah, it is. That's how well known that book has become. You mentioned the character Ahab. Anyone is going to know that Ahab comes from Moby Dick. You mentioned, just say, the white whale. They're going to immediately know you're talking about Moby Dick. That is how famous this novel has become. That is how well known this novel has become. And what is truly sad is that after it was published, it was panned by critics. It had very, very low, small sales and everything. Herman Melville passed away believing that Moby Dick was a failure. Believing that the novel that he thought was going to put him on the map, he died believing it was a complete and total failure that nobody cared about. And that's sad. I'm not an overly religious individual, but if there is some kind of afterlife or something like that, and, you know, you're basically able to still kind of, like, look down upon everybody and all of that kind of stuff, if all of that is true, it's one of those deals to where it's like, I hope Herman Melville can look down to this day and see that he was not a failure, that his book was not a failure, that probably, next to the Bible, Moby Dick is quite possibly, arguably, the most famous and well-known book to have ever existed. Even if you've never read it, even if you don't hardly know anything about it, like I said, people know what it is. They know Ahab is in Moby Dick. They know the white whale is Moby Dick. Heck, the original title of the book was Moby Dick or The Whale. It was simply, you know, it was originally simply just called The Whale. So I have multiple copies of Moby Dick. I have, a lot of times it was just I would see a particular cover that I liked and I was like, ooh, I want that. And so I would get it. I've got probably 25 different volumes of Moby Dick. And that's just the books themselves. I also have a black and white graphic novel that was done, an adaptation of Moby Dick. It's one of the best adaptations I've ever read of the story. Marvel Comics did an adaptation of it. There for a while, they did something called Marvel Illustrated, in which they took classic literature and they put it in comic book form. And so they did things like Moby Dick, The Last of the Mohicans, Dracula, Shipwrecked, things like that. They're very good reads. Like, I've often told people before that, like, if people want to get into, like, the classic literature, but they're like, I just can't read it because it's too dated, it's too old, it's too long-winded and things like that, I have recommended the Marvel Comics, Marvel Illustrated, to where, like, you can read this and see the artwork, and it's basically, you know, it's basically an abridged version. Like, they cut out some stuff and everything like that, but you get basically the meat of the story without having to read this very long-winded, like, old English-style books and things like that. That's why I also recommend that people watch accurate depictions of, like, works of Shakespeare and things like that. If there's ever been any graphic novels written about the works of Shakespeare, to do that, because I get it. I get there are people out there that just cannot handle that old-style stuff. I have no problem with it, but there are people that just, they can't. You know, whenever I was in 7th grade, I did a book report on The Red Badge of Courage. For anyone who's read The Red Badge of Courage, that can be a difficult read. Also in 7th grade, I did one on The War of the Worlds. Like, you know, my very first copy of Moby Dick I ever got was that one that my mom gave me whenever I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I read it little by little because it was a massive book to me back then. But I read it little by little. I finished that book before I became a teenager. Like, I'm very accustomed to reading those old style books and things like that. Like, that's just me. But if you ever really wanted to know the story of Moby Dick, I highly recommend the comics, Marvel Illustrated. Those are very good. Like I said, there is a newer black and white adaptation in graphic novel form of Moby Dick. That one is a good one to read as well. There are a number of cartoons and miniseries and things like that were done. The one with Patrick Stewart, it's very dated at this point. It's it was a very low budget thing. I believe it was like, you know, basically picture something of like Hallmark level budget. I believe it was a Hallmark production, now that I'm thinking about it. It's you know, just there was a lot of production issues with it. But it is good. It's very good. You know, I like it. But of course, nostalgia is on my side with that. I watched it whenever I was a child. I will easily recommend the 1956 version with Gregory Peck as Ahab if you're into more of the older movies and things like that. There was a two-part miniseries that they did that had, oh, what's his name? Charlie Cox, the guy that played Daredevil in Marvel's Daredevil, the Netflix series and everything. He plays Ishmael in this two-part series that was done. Ethan Hawke plays, Starbuck. I couldn't think of his name. Holy mackerel. But yeah, he plays Mr. Starbuck in that. It's very good as well. So yeah, I would highly recommend checking out any of those if you want to just full, like, see the story of Moby Dick without actually reading the original work. I highly recommend that. Didn't mean to really go on a rant about Moby Dick there, but you know, you guys can probably tell I'm very passionate about that book. And, you know, it does hurt my heart that Herman Melville died believing that he was a failure, because he absolutely was not. Everyone knows the name Herman Melville. He's had a species of whale named after him. There was a whale, a predatory whale, that was discovered a number of years ago, and it was a new species and everything, and so they decided to give it a new, like, official name and everything. And so the first part of the name is Leviathan, which is based on the word Leviathan from the Bible, the sea creature and everything, in which in Moby Dick itself, the whales are referred to as Leviathan and all of that. So that's where that came from. So the first name of the whale is Leviathan. And then the second part is Melville or Melville-I, something like that. But anywho, it's Melville is in it. So its full name is Leviathan Melville-I. So he was named after, or a species of whale was named after him. That's how influential he was. So there's that. But all right, guys, this has been the story of Mocha Dick. Again, you know, check it out. Like, look it up and everything. Like I said, the book that a lot of the firsthand accounts are taken from, that was written by Jeremiah Reynolds, is called Mocha Dick, The White Whale of the Pacific. You can get a paperback copy of it on Amazon for $9. And like I said, it's very short, 30, 40 pages, something like that. Probably not even that. Very, very short. It's worth reading and all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, like, it's very good. So, alrighty, guys. That pretty much does it for today's episode on Mocha Dick, and a lot more talking about Moby Dick than I thought I was going to do. But alrighty, guys, Monday I'm going to be doing, you know, I've started my third weekly episode. I don't have a name for it yet. You know, my Saturday episodes are Kaiju Carnage. My Wednesday episodes is Kaiju Havoc. And I don't know what to call my third episode yet. So if you have any suggestions for me, be sure to just message me and we'll see what I can do about that. But since next Monday, I'm going to be covering the documentary called Blackfish, which is about the mistreatment of orca whales from SeaWorld. And I did briefly talk about how orcas are beginning to attack ships and things like that out in the sea. I'm going to go into more detail about that and talk about that this Monday. So, next Saturday, a week from today, I'm going to be going back to a classic movie. I'm going to be covering the film Reptilicus. So if you guys have never heard of that, go ahead and check it out. Look up some information on it if you want. Can't wait to talk about it and all of that. It's been a while since I've done an old classic movie like that. So, for the kaiju stuff anyway, I know I just did Curse of the Undead, not even a week ago, but very much looking forward to doing Reptilicus. And then, yes, next Monday I will be covering the documentary Blackfish. And be sure to tune in this Wednesday for any kaiju news that I might have to give you guys. So, all right, guys, check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, Godzilla/King Kong Podcast. I have a Godzilla Ultima fan page. And on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, all righty, guys, thank you all very much. This has been Mocha Dick, the whale that inspired the myth known as Moby Dick. Next Saturday, I will be covering Reptilicus. Next Monday, I will be covering Blackfish. We will see y'all then. Please go follow, like, and follow me on YouTube and TikTok. I would very much appreciate it. We'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.